Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, July 14th, 2000. In the fireside room this morning, Gail Gamoff McCoy. It's titled Faith versus Fear: The Search for Social Justice in America. Let's listen in.
Hi, everybody. Good morning. It's still morning, isn't it? Seems like a whole day has been packed into this morning, getting ready to leave. Today we're going to talk a little bit about Genesis House itself, how Genesis House started, and what kind of programs we offer. The last two sessions we had, the initial session was about national statistics, national programming, the problem we're having in the country with incarcerating individuals and the fact that that's the second largest growth industry in our country now. Yesterday I talked a little bit about some progressive programs in the United States and Canada, generally speaking. And today we'll talk about the Genesis House program and how it got started. It's an interesting way that it got started. There was a priest called Father DePaul Jenska, who was a young priest in New York City in the 70s, and he was near the Holland Tunnel, and he saw two women he assumed were homeless and needed a ride, and he picked them up in the car. And when they got in his car, they asked him what services he needed. He was completely shocked. He had no idea that that's, you know, what he was doing, was picking up two prostitutes by the Holland Tunnel. And that sort of made him think a lot about ministry to women in prostitution. And he did that work for about 10 years in New York, and during that time he was on Phil Donahue twice. And he was actually in Hustler magazine as the priest to the hookers in, I think, 1973. He then came to Chicago to get his master's degree in theology at CTU and met a man called Tom Behrens, who I knew when I was a student, a graduate student doing my internship. And Tom Behrens was walking up and down the streets of the neighborhoods where there was a lot of prostitution, a lot of teenage runaways, and his group was founding what is called Night Ministry in Chicago. And Night Ministry reaches out to all the people of the night and all the teenage runaways. So our two organizations began to grow together. Tom Behrens' group specifically targeting youth and men, and ours targeting women and girls involved in prostitution. And we actually are near each other geographically, our first offices, although we have more offices now. At that point, Father DePaul met a woman named Edwina Gately, who was in a volunteer missionary movement, and they sent for some women from VMM, which is a volunteer missionary movement of lay people who do missionary work all over the world, actually. And they sent people there, and they rented a house together, the community, and they called the house Genesis House. And after they got there, one of the first things that happened is as they started to go to the brothels and go to the streets, it dawned on them that there was nowhere for people to go, women to go, and girls if they wanted to get out of prostitution. There was no program, really, ever. There's always been ministry to women in prostitution. We know it's as old as Mary Magdalene, but there's not actually been specific programming dealing with the issues of prostitution, which are separate from mental health, substance abuse, sexual addiction, incest survivor, trauma survivor, and this type of thing. They're all those things rolled in together. The other thing that we realized at Genesis House was that there had not been an active political movement to really start to look at the system. And we know about systems theory. We don't just want to change the person. We want to try and work on the system that is oppressing that individual. So they became one of the first organizations in the world and in the country that, number one, had comprehensive programming, which is from the crisis moment on the street all the way through to long-term residential rehabilitation, but that also began to do serious outreach to the courts and communications with judges, public defenders, city attorneys, and so on. Now, today, we see somewhere between 4,000 to 5,000 women and girls annually, which is a very large number. We have two large offices, but we only have slots for 8 to 10 women. So right now, we have a proposal in front of Mayor Daley for housing for 40 to 50 women to open a third office. If you know how Chicago sort of is against the lake there, there's a north side, a west side, and a south side. There's really no east side because that's the lake itself. So we have a north side office by Wrigley Field. It's 911 West Addison, which works for us because it's an extremely noisy neighborhood with an L stop. So we're not in a quiet location. We have a west side location, which is about 10 minutes from Cook County Hospital. And we're trying now to open a south side office. In addition to that, we have a federal grant in right now for a medical mobile outreach unit, which we have a collaboration with Mount Sinai Hospital, whose mission is to serve the underserved. And they have approximately 20 clinics all across Chicago. And we partner with them a lot for nursing care so that we can offer free nursing care and free medications. Our philosophy and our mission, which was read last night, is that nobody pays for anything at Genesis House if they don't have the money. So the program specifically and how they're set up is they're basically two very large programs. There's the residential program and there's the outreach program. So I'm going to talk first about the outreach program. The outreach program, interestingly enough, is the most funded program because it's a public health initiative. And people, I guess the federal government and state governments like to give money to public health initiatives. They get worried about health issues. And unfortunately, when HIV became a large problem in this country, Genesis House grew very quickly with funding. I think we were infused with almost $700,000 almost instantly during that time, just from the AIDS Foundation, from the Center for Disease Control, from AMFAR, these type of organizations that work with HIV and AIDS. The outreach workers themselves are women in recovery from prostitution and substance abuse for a minimum of 2 years. They need to be out of the lifestyle. They then go through training such as they need to be Red Cross certified in HIV outreach, outreach training, domestic violence certification, and so on. Within the first 6 months of their employment, they need to have all of those certificates so they have a body of knowledge which is similar for all of them. We then get, we're lucky, we have a vice lieutenant, Jeanette Barron, who gives us all the internal information of the Chicago Police Department. It's about this thick of where the time of arrest, where people are arrested, what streets they're on. This is, of course, Freedom of Information Act. It lists names of, you know, and everything of customers and the women. And this, and also word of mouth, actually our crisis clients coming in, helps us to know where the routes are. And that's what we call them, routes. And this is where our outreach workers actually go out onto the streets, armed with information, condoms, all kinds of other things in their packs, and talk to the women about not only public health concerns, which is sexually transmitted diseases, hepatitis with needles, and family planning as well, and HIV, and they're educated to talk to them about that, and then we take information, which we have to give to the federal government to look at how disease is progressing in this country. Because as we know, HIV is going up in the minority communities. TB and hepatitis are back with a vengeance. And there's a lot of health problems. So we track those individuals. We have to do a six-month follow-up and an annual follow-up of anyone we've seen to try and see if there's progress or what impact our program has made on that individual. Most of the women who end up coming to Genesis House have had a contact with an outreach worker. The other thing about that is sometimes they know the person from the former lifestyle that she had. So she's showing that person by example that you can change and there's a different way to live. So that is the street outreach component. We partner still with Night Ministry. Night Ministry has a huge bus, and they have pastoral care individuals on their bus as well, and we go out with them, and they have cookies and hot chocolate, and they have nursing on their bus. We partner with the Chicago Recovery Alliance, which does needle exchange. And we have to be careful about that because the federal government is very much against needle exchange. So we're there when they're doing needle exchange to talk to the women that come in for the needles that are exchanged. Although statistically there's been a lot of protesting, as you know, around the country, and some cities it's funded, some not, because it shows, statistics show that it lowers the rate, the incidence of HIV, and it does not raise the addiction. Because obviously if someone's addicted and they can't get a clean needle, they're not going to say, oh gee, wait till I get a clean needle. I mean, it's not going to happen. They're going to use what's ever there. So we, Dan Bigg is internationally recognized. He goes to Europe because there's a big problem with needles in Eastern Bloc, the formerly Eastern Bloc countries, and Russia and Germany. And he we're lucky to have him in Chicago, and he's one of our collaborators. He was the only person on Nightline, in fact, was Soros. When Mr. Soros appeared, Dan Bigg was talking about needle exchange. So that is one aspect of outreach. The second is that we go to the courts and the jails. Our workers go into the bullpen and talk to the ladies. And from there, we developed one of the first programs in the United States, which is a condition of bond program that we worked out with the judges and the public defenders. That program is, if the public defender, first of all, our workers talk to them about it when they're in the bullpen, in the jail, the woman can opt for counseling instead of going to jail. You know, revolutionary, right? She can sign up for this program. The judge then orders her into the program. Now, if she doesn't, she doesn't have to go to the program if she doesn't want to. If she opts for that, she needs to come to Genesis House, and we do an organized program, which actually Ingrid had a lot of input in, too, when she was a supervisor on her sabbatical on the West Side. And it goes into not only self-esteem, but referral sources for psychiatric, for medical, for dental, for substance abuse. We do then an assessment on the woman, which is to humanize that person for the judge. And that assessment goes back to the judge and tells him what her problems are. Does she have psychiatric problems? Does she have medical problems? Is she an addict? What does she need? So he starts to see, he or she, judge, starts to see that person in a different light. You know, this is what we feel this person needs. And if they attend the program, they do not go to jail, and they do not have a record. So now in Chicago and all over the country, the three strikes and you're out is being enforced. So three arrests for prostitution is a felony. So I think at one time last year we had 52 women that showed up in one day, and we decided we'd have to have it twice a month. And that's how that program works, and we've had a lot of people very interested in that. So it gets them away from an arrest and gives them information. The exciting thing about that program is about 20% of the women have come back for help, which is really a great number when you consider they had no intention at that point of getting out of prostitution. They were actually caught soliciting. So that's an exciting number for us, and it shows that they come and we serve a lunch and they get to feel the community and they meet the staff, and it's then a comfortable place for them to return. So that's that introduction. The other things we do are crisis. We see crisis clients 24 hours a day, and the police know about this, so if they can sometimes divert an arrest, they will, especially if it's a young girl or maybe an underage minor, they will bring her directly to Genesis House. We have 24-hour day crisis. We have two food pantries. We have two clothing pantries as well, and they can also come in for case management if they're in crisis. In other words, our case manager will assess them and see what their needs are, and whatever it is they might need, we will do a referral. So the only rules for crisis are that if she can obviously still be using and she can still be prostituting, but she cannot be overtly either, you know, really, really so out of it that she can't function there, or violent or aggressive. But otherwise, all crisis clients are accepted. Crisis, normally, if we refer someone with case management to treatment, we then follow that individual in treatment. All women who enter our program must, if they're using drugs and alcohol, complete a 21 to 28 day program successfully before they actually enter the residence. This is for a lot of reasons. It shows that they are committed to what they're doing. It shows that they can successfully go through a structured program. In addition, it would be very difficult for someone just on the street yesterday to come into a program where someone perhaps has been off of drugs and alcohol for 10, 12 months and to mix that together. So that helps us then to talk to the counselors, how was she in drug treatment or alcohol treatment? Was she okay? Is she committed? And if that person is successful, they can then come into our residence. So now I'm just going to talk a little bit about the residential program at Genesis House. The residence starts with a 30-day of what we call orientation. Orientation is to see if she's a good fit for us and if she likes us as well. It's a mutual, is this the right place for you? At that point, we would attempt to look at if someone's perhaps a psychopath or sociopath, that person would be referred to a more appropriate program. The person really needs to be someone who can function and live in a community and do what's required in our program, because there's a lot of requirements there. It's a pretty structured program. If the psychiatric problems were too great that the person could not function in the environment with the groups and the counseling, we would then refer them to for more intensive psychiatric care. That doesn't mean they couldn't come back. But oftentimes what we find is women come to us and haven't gotten the right care before they got there. They haven't been diagnosed properly. They haven't gotten the right medication. They haven't gotten the right medical or psychiatric medication. And many times we have to go back to that step so they can come in. Many, many times, I can't tell you, we don't know why they're on certain medications when they come there. They're clearly not bipolar, or they're clearly not psychotic, or even medical medications. Why do you have this bag of medication that's been given to you either in jail or somewhere else? And in drug treatment, the specific focus is drugs, and many, many times the psychiatric issues are misdiagnosed or they're just not caught. We recently had someone, and this will be repetitive for those of you in other workshops, who was in drug treatment for quite some time. And the minute she got there, she was up all night sleepwalking and eating and slept all day. And we were just shocked that the drug treatment, how can you miss this? She was there for 28 days and clearly had deep-rooted, serious psychiatric problems. So we had to instantly refer her to psychiatric treatment. And the sad part about this story is because they had missed it, we could not get her in on an emergency basis because she wasn't violent, she wasn't suicidal, and our women don't have insurance, which is always, as a rule, don't have insurance. Some do if they're disabled. By the time we got the appointment, she had already left Genesis House because of her problems. So that's always sad, sort of the double-edged sword of not getting the right treatment. So the 30-day orientation, the woman does not get a personal space at that time. Since we're so small, we're just growing out, you know, where we are, and that's where we have this housing proposal. She actually has to sleep on the couch at that time and store her clothing in the communal closet. After the 30-day orientation, where we sort of figure out, do you need, with the case management piece, are you going to need job training, computer training, dental care, AIDS care, whatever it might be, what are your goals, what kind of support systems? We're figuring all that out in the first 30 days. When everything is okay and we see she can follow the rules of the house, she then gets her own space and joins the community with her own dresser and her own bed and her own space in the house. And that's like usually a very happy day for the women that they're finally officially part of the community. And we find that's a good 30 days is good to really get to know each other. And many women decide at that time they can't get up at 7 o'clock and do meditation every day. They don't want to cook. They don't want to do the things that are necessary. And that it's just not the place for them. They want more freedom. So They have to do all of those things. They have to get up. There's a schedule. 7 a.m. is meditation. It's non-denominational. Whatever. If you want to bring your Bible, it's fine. If you want to do Maya Angelou, that's fine. Whatever you would like to do. Then we have groups that we have internally for the program. We have house groups, how's housing going? And we have a variety of volunteers that come in and do different things at different times. We had a female African-American psychologist who did post-traumatic stress syndrome, because women in prostitution have been likened to survivors of war. Once they're off the streets, how many times they've been hurt, hit, strangled, pushed out of cars, gotten into cars, and this happens routinely where the knob has been removed, just like in the movies, pulled into the back of vans and sexually assaulted by five people who are hiding back there, locked up in basements and assaulted. I could tell you 100 stories. Oftentimes our women have slash marks on their necks from where people have taken knives to their necks or different horrible things that have happened to them. So we work, it's an interesting marriage in a way, because we're working with trauma survivor issues and serious childhood issues of incest and sexual abuse, sexual assault, and 12-step drug treatment. So one's behavioral and one's psychoanalytic in nature. So it's probably also one of the first programs in the country that's trying to do this together and really look at all the issues. We have a lot of relationships with other organizations that help us. We work with the Counseling Center of Lakeview, who has psychiatrists and counselors where women can go out. We work with the YWCA on incest survivors and sexual assault. We work with rape victims advocates who come in. For example, when they come in and talk to the women didn't recognize it as a sexual assault if it happened over the age of 18. They just accepted the fact that that was an okay thing, but did understand that it was a sexual assault under the age of 18. So we do a lot of work in that direction. Howard Brown Clinic comes in and talks to the women about just their bodies and self-exams, breasts, you know, what are symptoms of cancer? I mean, just this type of thing to understand and know your body. We have someone who comes who's the, what does she do at Jenny Jones? She does something at Jenny Jones. I think she's an information specialist. She's a researcher, I think. She does our GED training, and she's a volunteer, and then also continuing education on the computers. We hook up with the women in trades if the women want to learn a trade, if they're not interested in college or computer training and would like to learn a trade. So we have all kinds of different volunteers that come in, spirituality and feminist spirituality. We have people come in and lead that at different times. And then also they go to the 12-step group outside that is their choice. So if it's Cocaine Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, inside Genesis House we have an open meeting, the only one in the city of Chicago, which is Prostitutes Anonymous, which is every Friday night at 7 o'clock. Thursday is hospitality night, where they can bring their families or anyone like that that they want to bring. Then we also work with the Department of Children and Family Services, because many of the women have pending issues, either in foster care or they may be starting to lose their children. And we do overnight supervised visits, and we do supervised visits of the children. So we would report back to DCFS how that visit went, and we would be working on parenting with them within the house so we can observe how they treat the child, how the child's relating to them, and then we work on specific issues which we see that the women might have. It might just be we see them raise their voice and yell too much at their children, or whatever it might be. So we like the children to come so we can help them with their issues and their problems, because if it's an off-site visit, we really don't know what transpired there. And that's one of my dreams. I have a whole dream for how our new housing is going to be, but to have rooms for the children, because, you know, they play with my shoes while they're there, color my desk. And I think last holiday season, I was looking at little Mike, just in time to see little Mike grab the scissors and blood comes spurting out all over my desk. I was like, ah! So we really need better space for the kids because they're kind of like running all over and finding whatever they can, which I enjoy, Mike, very much. But that was a scary moment because he was unsupervised. I think I was on the computer doing something. So we do have the children come as well. Now, we then set their goals with them. You know, what is your goal? And you have to meet your goals before you leave this program. We won't let you out. You are captive. We don't believe in kicking people out, which is, it's funny. I talk all over the country, and people, when I say they're there 10 to 18 months, people just like, oh, that long? And it's so funny because it's like, well, let's see, 25 to 30 years of abuse, homelessness, mental health issues. You know, yeah, we can sew that up in 10 months, you know. Yeah, they're there for 10 to 18 months. And we're just all the time working on what are your goals? What do you want to happen when you leave here? They're not allowed to leave until they A, graduate, B, have a place to live that we feel is suitable for them. They have a means of income, and usually the legal issues, we have pro bono attorneys that help us work out the legal issues. We go to court with them and advocate for them. And often it is kind of nice. Genesis House is the magic word with the judge or the prosecuting attorney. But sometimes it's funny, we'll hear that women come up and say, I'm at Genesis House, you know, and the judge will go, okay, and they've never been there. So that's kind of funny, sort of the password sometimes. So we want all of their legal issues to be cleared up, and hopefully the DCFS issues. They might be getting their kids back when they leave Genesis House. For 6 months, they're not allowed to work. The reason being, and this is, of course, everybody, you know, is like, you gotta work. Get them to work. They must work right away. Well, interestingly enough, if you would interview all the women in our house, you would find they've all had jobs. They've all had more than one job. They're not afraid to work. The issue or concern is, why is it when you work and you get a job and you get a paycheck, do you then take your paycheck eventually and begin to spend it on drugs or alcohol or give it to someone in a bad dysfunctional relationship who then holds you hostage? What are your problems? It's not can you work. They can all work. That's not the problem. Anybody can walk into McDonald's or Walgreens and get a job. And a lot of times they sneak and get a job. You know, they really want to work, and we have to take them off the job because we want them to focus on themselves exclusively for 6 months. It's probably the first time in their lives they've ever had that opportunity where they haven't been hurt, they haven't been afraid, they haven't been hungry, they haven't been molested, beaten, something horrible happening to them. So it's the 6 months which solely devoted to beginning to work on yourself and liking yourself and what are your needs and how many times do you have to go to therapy, how many 12-step groups do you have to make. You have to make all of our in-house counseling session, and then we offer one-on-one therapy there. Our director is a graduate of Columbia University and has a master's degree, our residential director, and she does one-on-one and does assessments. So after that 6 months, we try and help them plan for what is an appropriate job for you. And let's start looking at it. And we will not approve of jobs that are not appropriate. For example, one woman was working in a restaurant where was on a strip of bars and things in Chicago, and people were always coming in intoxicated and partying, and that was a trigger for her. And then the manager tried to start giving her night hours, like 2 a.m. and this kind of thing. So she had to quit her job and start over again. So we really monitor every person. It's highly individualized, carefully. And usually the woman will figure out when her graduation date is. That's not imposed. And they'll tell us, well, I would like to graduate at this time because I think I'll have my apartment by then, I'll have my job, and we'll have all this. And we'll approve of that graduation date if she's met all her criteria for the program. And that also includes the psychological issues. They have to sign a release of confidentiality so we can be talking to the counselors and making sure that they're making progress at that time. So then we get to the graduation date, which is an extremely happy day. in Genesis House, we have a 70% success rate of our graduates staying out of prostitution and substance abuse. That's why we were featured in Time Magazine about a year and a half ago, November 16th, actually 1998, with Newt Gingrich sinking on the cover. We were featured in Life Off the Streets. And we've been in the New York Times, the Washington Post. For some reason, I was on the radio in San Antonio this year, live, which was very odd. It was a very odd interview, because he was not happy with what I said. He was very... And he said, well, like, I guess you gave me something to think about. He didn't even open it up for questions from the public. What was wrong with what I said? But we've had a lot of publicity because of our success rate. And what's so very funny about our success rate, it is all based on common sense. We have not invented the wheel at Genesis House. But believe it or not, we're one of the only programs in the United States at all that does this. And the first thing that we do is from start to finish. From that first contact on the street or walking in off the street, we have women walk in with AIDS that are barefoot off the street, to just coming for groups, come in for case management, come in to talk to somebody, all the way through to you can live with us until you graduate. It was the only program that I know of anywhere, also in the world, because I've traveled quite a bit, that does all of that. Some do crisis, some do case management, some do sort of homeless shelter, but not the intensity and the clinical intensity of what we do. The other thing is just to really provide, do very good assessments and provide for their needs and see the whole inclusive picture, family, friends, children, and work with all of that. The strong volunteers, the professional people, and again, a good example is Ingrid, who gave up her time when we lost CDC funding. In one day, we lost $600,000 in funding from the Center for Disease Control. And just really, I took a 25% pay cut at that time. The whole staff did who wanted to stay. That's how devoted they were. And Ingrid came and became supervisor on the west side until we could get some funding restored. And those are the kind of devoted people that come to Genesis House. And the volunteers really make it for us in terms of holidays, birthdays, graduations. Just wonderful. So that final graduation day then, there is a ritual that they have, and sort of the women have developed it, and mostly the spiritual. We have a lot of people that come from Loyola that help us. And there's a vase that are two women blended, African-American woman and a Caucasian woman. And the vase goes in the middle of the table, and there's lots of flowers. And everyone who wants to say something about a graduate chooses a flower they feel is appropriate. Some choose red or yellow or, you know, for whatever reason, and tell their feelings about her graduation. Family members and children come, you know, I'm so proud of you, mother. I mean, it's just, and everyone cries the whole time because it's just really beautiful. And then the whole year we're collecting donations for, like, as a student would set up their first apartment, we're collecting, if we get a television or radio or an iron, you know, people, it's always squirreled away. Where'd that TV go that comes in? And we lock it up in a room so that we can set up the first apartment, just because they need all of that. Dishes, sets of dishes, towels. And then we have sort of almost like a shower where you get all of that stuff at the graduation, and then lots of cards with money and lots of gift certificates to go out and buy what you need. And then we have a big, huge meal that the woman normally work on for at least 2 days, all of home-cooked food, and everybody's there. And usually the women work out songs, some singing, and we hold hands, and then we physically take them in our van and we move them in. Our house moves them in and makes sure everything is okay. And then we do home visits for quite some time, and anyone can come back whenever they want to for anything they need, which I think is another secret to our success. If they need a food bag, I mean, obviously, a lot of times they don't start out on high-paying jobs. They need the food now more than they did when they lived with us, because they're trying to manage a small budget and maybe they have their children back. So we see our graduates all the time, which is why we can be assured of our statistic. They're invited back for case management whenever they run into trouble. Every service is free. Food is free. If they need clothing, it's free. If they need to drop off their children for an afternoon, we'll take care of them. If there's some reason, instead of leaving them with someone who might hurt them. So, and our graduates come back. They're formally invited. We keep in touch with all of them to all graduations and all celebrations. They're formally invited to come back, and they do. This year, we found out about a new thing, which is the city of Chicago has each department sponsor a family. So we decided we were family, and we put in to be sponsored by the city of Chicago department. I think we got sewers, which they must make a lot of money, because they come and they ask you what you want. So it's not donations like it usually is. What do you want? And they go out and buy brand new toys and gifts for not only our residents, but for all the kids. And then there's another woman who's a flight attendant, and she's been a volunteer for 14 years, and she gets a teddy bear for every single child that comes. And last year, I mean, the tables were just covered with teddy bears. I don't know how she does it. She collects them for an entire year. So all the graduates come back at that time, and they're always welcome to PA, Prostitutes Anonymous, or anything else like that, which is why I think we're very, very proud of our program. I think it's very unique, but I think it could be replicated anywhere. The question I always get, which will be sort of my final, about the program and then open it up to questions, is where do we get money? That's always a very, very big question. And anywhere. Anywhere. But basically, we are funded because of the public health initiative. That is our largest money. That is our federal money. The Congressional Black Caucus just lobbied this year. They were very angry about what they felt was AIDS funding not going to minority populations, where AIDS is on the rise in this country. Put up a big stink, and they got, I think, $300 million this year. They're asking for $1 billion next year, and they will probably get $700 million. We're recipients of some of that money because it's an effort to reach marginalized minority populations, and I'm proud to say we're only one of 25 organizations in the country that receive that outreach money. So we're very proud of that. We've gotten money from the Center for Disease Control, from the Department of Public Health. We get money from the city and state Department of Human Services for homeless, for domestic violence, and for transitional living. We are constantly writing grants to foundations and have some very friendly foundations to us. The MacArthur family sent someone to Genesis House, an actual family member, which was really, wow, the MacArthur Foundation is here in our house. A Sarah Lee Corporation has been wonderful to us. The Chicago Tribune, the Chicago Community Trust, the AIDS Foundation, to name just a few. And churches. Churches give usually smaller because they have less to give, but we're supported by many different denominations, the Presbyterian Church, Lutheran Church, Catholic Church, little orders of radical sisters send us money, sometimes little crumpled $5 bills, you know, and you can barely read the you go, you do that, you know, and it's just so cute when you open it up and you see the sister, you know, putting that $5 in the envelope. It's very touching. The business community, especially the female business community in Chicago, donates all our clothing to us, our suitcases, our dishes, our everything, and constantly. Sometimes we have so much clothes we don't even know what to do with it, but we always say, don't give us your junk for a tax write-off. We don't want your, because one day, I think we got a bag of men's clothes, like he'd been dead for a long time, I think, too. It was really bad. So we give a lot of things to the Goodwill. We're a feeder to the Goodwill. And we are a member of the Chicago Food Depository, which we get our food for 5 cents a pound. So we're always well fed. Nobody's starving there. We call it the Genesis House spread. You come and you gain weight. It's like automatic. We have a name for it. And we can go to the YWCA free. So, and we have individual donors. We have a list of individual donors, and because of our media attention, we run WGN rebutting Pretty Women last year, which was really fun. We rebutted Pretty Women and told people that nobody's going to meet Richard Gere. That's like not good. And there was actually, I want you to know, a different ending to Pretty Woman, where he leaves her. And they decided the audience wouldn't like that. There were two written endings, which was the truthful ending was not filmed. And we've had an international documentary about us that aired in Ireland and England about communities of faith. It was called Genesis House Communities of Faith. So sometimes, and we just got a, I don't know, from an anonymous donor and who wants to give more after they got information, who was in a doctor's office and had the old Time magazine was there. And when Time came out, Mrs. Sabaro, of the Sabaro's restaurants, it was funny. She called me at the holidays and said, do you know who I am? And I said, no. She goes, I'm Mrs. Santa Claus. And I said, okay. And she said, do you believe that? And I've learned you always say yes. Yes, I do. I bet you are. And so at the end, she said, I'm Mrs. Sabaro of Sabaro's national chain of restaurants, and I'd like to support Genesis House Christmas this year because I just read your article in Time. So lots of really wonderful things like that happen, too, in terms of keeping us going. And sometimes we get big anonymous checks, or we'll get a check every week or every month from the, you know, $25 from a construction company. You know, it's very interesting. So that's pretty much where how we support ourselves. It's always a scramble from year to year. And I'd now like to open it up for questions.
Can you get enough affordable housing? Is that a problem?
It's a huge problem. That's why I have that proposal. And there's only one bed for every three homeless in the city of Chicago.
And there's building supportive housing.
Pardon me? That's always the hardest part, is finding affordable housing for the women, which is, I do think 18 months is the extreme stay, and I don't think it would be that long if there was more affordable supportive housing. Almost the minute they get in, they have to sign up for housing if we know there's not going to be anywhere for them to go. But we do find it, but it's probably the toughest task of the whole graduation process, is finding appropriate in a correct neighborhood and so on. In Chicago, for example, there's an apartment building run by a man in recovery from alcoholism who actually runs a program and rents the apartments only to people in recovery. And then if you relapse, you're out of that apartment, out of that community. So there are some interesting efforts and like that. And there's been more of a push in Chicago. There's a place called Deborah's Place, which is pretty well known. It's run by Pat Crowley, who's a nun. And they had a big controversy because they took over a convent in a gentrified neighborhood, and all the neighbors protested it. But there's a movement for transitional housing. And I think we'll get our housing. Because I've been doing this for 2 years and lobbied everybody, and I think because there's a second serial killer, unfortunately, in our city, unfortunately it's timely to try and remove more of the women from harm's way, and that will probably be the catalyst for us getting our building. I'm supposed to meet with Mayor Daley when I get back. I turned in the proposal when I left. So everybody say a prayer for us. We get our housing.
Excuse me. We also have what we call SRO.
Right.
And it's single room occupancy. For the women who don't have jobs, they can move right in. And this fund pays for their apartment. Right. It's like a little kitchenette.
The Chicago Housing Authority,
right.
CHA.
Yeah. CHA, right.
And I think HUD. Right. HUD does some funding for that.
They don't have to pay rent until they get a job. Get a job, and it's based on their income.
Yeah.
How'd you like the city of Chicago politicians?
Is that me?
I had to travel to Springfield and it was funny because my purpose was to confront them about discriminatory funding for domestic violence. And I thought I was meeting with the legislative liaison. And I walked into this room, and it was so weird, because you know how you're sort of in a frame of mind, I'm going to sit down with a legislative liaison and talk to him about funding. And it was all the heads of the Department of Human Services for the state of Illinois with a tape recorder and a conference call. And so, you know, all right, that's fine. You want to record it, it's okay with me. And because the way the funding was set up is sort of, if how many men do you get orders of protection and how many men are prosecuted and so on and so forth. Well, our women normally don't know who the perpetrators are. If it's a customer, they don't know their identity. So they're not going to get an order of protection. Secondly, they may be in a dependent relationship with the person that they're with, the partner, either a pimp or someone who's on drugs himself or herself, who's sending them out to prostitute, and they're not going to get an order of protection against that person because they might even be afraid of getting hurt. So to me, what I said is the spirit of the law is getting them out of harm's way and their children. And if someone's prosecuted along the way, that's fine. So the, again, good old Lieutenant Barron, I love this woman, did a sampling of those who had been arrested for soliciting and those who had been arrested for violent crimes. And 50% of the men came up with dual arrests, which is, when you consider what are the odds of getting arrested for both, number one. So the guy, especially, who's out on the street looking for a woman is a violent guy normally who wants to subjugate that woman in some way, because that's one of the most easy targets is a woman that's out on the street. It's not going to be the same as someone who's in a who's more protected in an escort service or who's a dancer with a big bouncer there who's going to beat you up if you touch her. You know, these are women that are unprotected out on the street. So a person who wants to hurt someone has a target there, which the murders are a case in point. So we got that domestic violence funding. We got more from the state, who's Republican, than the city, because the city is, there's so many people at the table. U of I gets all the Republican money from downstate University of Illinois, and this is the way it flows. And then Cook County gets all the Democrat, Cook County Hospital, Cook County gets all the Democratic money. And then there's a handful of people, like they're called Haymarket Interventions, Gateway, who are providing services. And to break into that, because the way it works, unfortunately, is they don't want you to take any of their pie, their piece of the pie. So if you get a piece of the pie, they lose a piece of the pie. It's unbelievable, the scrambling that goes on. Just an example, we were the first people doing outreach in an area called Uptown. And the request for funding proposal came out. It's a given, right? Outreach to sex workers, that's our money. University of Illinois got it. So, of course, I'm on the phone. Who sat on this review committee? They would not send that to me. I said, look, this is Freedom of Information Act. You have got to give me, I want the names of the people who gave this money to University of Illinois, you know, the octopus. So finally, eventually, I get this like blank piece of paper almost that says members, Bill Smith, you know, Sarah Jones, know where they work, know where they're, just like all these names listed. You got to figure it out, because they didn't want to reveal to me who was on the committee that made the decision. And that's how it works. You know, once you're at that review committee, then, oh, I'll review yours and you review mine. You know, so I've been raising a pretty big fuss about that, and the Department of Health asked me now to be on a review committee, and we're doing our first collaboration with the Department of Health in the city on syphilis, a syphilis initiative. The state, however, had us train the entire state organizations and outreach to sex workers for 2 years, so we got money again from Springfield before we got it from the city of Chicago. Because it is, you know, everybody's in a tight group and they don't want you to have any of that. And, you know, you have to rattle the cage, but you also have to not alienate anybody. So it's a tough thing, because if you alienate somebody, you won't get any money. So it's, can we, and, you know, I'll say it now, they're all doing good work, but since they get a million and we get zero, would you give me like 100,000 of each person's budget? And they won't even miss it, and we'll have at least a million. You know, just give me 100,000 of these 10 organizations. So I think, and there's going to be some transitioning in Chicago. Mayor Daley's actually pretty good about it, but it's still the good old boy network there. But I think we're going, but you have to work hard to break it. If you, there's organizations that are not there anymore. Because if you don't keep working and working and working and working, they just, you won't get the money.
Does 6 months that a woman is out on her own, is that before or after graduation? And how do they live? They don't work, or they can't work for that 6 months.
They live with us. They live with
but
us.
But they're out on their own. They have their own apartment in that.
No. They live with us in our residence.
That's 6 months. Okay.
In our residence.
Okay.
How many clients do you have, like, at a point in time, not annually, but...
Well, let's see. We have to keep... I think we have about... Quarterly, we all programs about 1,000 quarterly, because we report to the federal government on a quarterly basis, and we report to the city on a monthly basis. So it's about that number. We have, I think, I can't keep track sometimes, because each time you get funding, you hire an employee for funding. We have about 6 or 7 outreach workers, and they are supposed to make 50 to 70 contacts a week. And they may see 12 women in a bullpen, and then case management has so many people they're supposed to do. And we have a 75 to 100 waiting list for housing. And it's just heartbreaking. I mean, that's our biggest problem right now, is we have no beds. And if you refer them elsewhere, they don't get the proper care. It'll be a homeless shelter, or it'll be, you know, substance abuse and not deal with the other stuff. So that's why so many women want to come in, because they know we help them with the issues.
How do you, on a day-to-day basis, say it's time for meditation, and somebody says, no, I don't want to do meditation, and then it's time for the next day, and so, no, I don't want to get up. What's kind of the procedure for that?
Well, it's as part of the, when you come into the program, there's a lot of paperwork that the women sign to come in, and there are requirements of the program, and if you don't want to do that, we have something we call consequences, and that could be something like not being able to have a pass for the weekend, whatever it might be, but you do have to participate in the community, and that's part. Now, it'd be different if you were sick or something like that. But that's part of being part of Genesis House. There are things you have to do. You need to be home for community dinner. That's a requirement. You have to sit down with the group and eat. You know, there's a lot of individual things they can do all day. Go to their therapist, go to the Y, as long as we approve of it. Everything doesn't happen in a glom, you know, that everybody goes together. And there's a lot of individual in the programming, but the things that happen in the house, you need to attend. I mean, that's part of being the community.
So if you didn't show up for dinner, would you like the person? I'm just thinking, I know like programs like for, you know, anorexia, there's some of those programs that are extremely strict and, you know, behavior modification oriented like that. And I'm just wondering, kind of on that spectrum, kind of how, where you would be, like if somebody doesn't come home for dinner, do you talk to the person first, or is there...
Well, obviously, I mean, they could have missed a bus, or they could have, I mean, or they could have been sitting at Cook County Clinic forever. I mean, as long as that, I mean, if there's a real excuse, of course, that's fine. But if it's, you know, you were supposed to be home from your therapist at 3 and you decided not to come home till 6, then that would be dealt with. And it depends on, we have a lot of different, because obviously we know there might be a relapse. We do random drug testing, and we have internal testing. So if someone was gone all night or comes home late or that kind of thing, we have on-the-spot testing. We also have to do that for DCFS. We have to report that they're not using drugs or alcohol. It depends on what is done, because it's so individualized. It might be that you have to go, if you had drinks, you might have to go to detox for 3 days. Or if you use drugs, you might, but we will take you back. That's one of the, again, because of our spiritual base, we'll take you back as long as you follow through with what we say you need to do to come back. And some women we know, we've had women that came 3 times until they graduated. It took several times, and we're known for taking people back as long as you'll do, you know, we may learn something about somebody and say, this time you have to see your therapist once a week or you can't stay in the program. You know, it might be that we find that out, that that's what has to be done. And consequences could be, if it's something like a person gets violent, they may have to go to not only their therapist, but to a homeless shelter for 3 days, be removed from the community. We have relationships with different homeless shelters. In fact, one executive director of a homeless shelter formerly was a supervisor at Genesis House. And she has a shelter called Rest. So we would send someone there for two or, you know, depending 1 to 5 days, depending on what happened, so they can think about what happened and if they want to be back in the community and do what they need to do to be there. But it's democratic in terms of one person can't be destroying the community and destroying the growth and progress of someone else. You know, while we will work with their problems, you still need to do what you need to do so that everybody, when we were talking about community last night, has an experience that's good there, and respect each other and respect staff and follow the rules.
I guess I would like to just compliment all of you for this week, because I know for people who have not grown up with structure and boundaries, to be in a place like this where it's totally different and where you can really kind of slip off and kind of do whatever you want, how willingly and gladly everybody participated, all of you, and I mean, you know, showed up. I just thought it was going to be a huge problem, frankly. And I mean, it was just amazing to me how everybody, I'm not sure the lapses, but people showed up and everybody did what they were supposed to do and what, you know, they knew the schedule, and it's complicated and it's hard. And so I just kind of wanted to compliment all of you too. You just did an outstanding.
We're really proud of them. And I do want to add, though, I mean, the feedback that I got from them is they really enjoyed everything they did.
Yes.
They really liked the things they participated in. So.
I was going to ask a question which you may have addressed earlier on in the week, but I wasn't here for that. But the connection between the small Alpine community and Genesis House in Chicago, how did that take place?
Ingrid. Ingrid's an executive board member of Genesis House, and her interaction with Genesis House precedes me. I've been there 4.5 years, and I think she's been referring women to Genesis House for about 10 years just through what she's known. I think she met a woman. She went to court for some reason and met a woman in prostitution. I don't know why she was observing court, and it took her physically to Genesis House about 10 years ago. The woman eventually did die. It's a sad story. And but from that point on, Ingrid wanted to see it. She knew it was the only place to take someone that had those issues, and has always supported us. So that's our connection. And I met her. I was speaking at the Chicago Foundation for Women, and she introduced herself. And she brings students there occasionally because she does urban studies. And they come and...
So that was a connection.
Yeah, she said, I'm
Ingrid. The second part to that question is the impressions of the people that were here hold it.
I'd say 95% of the people were nice. And there were a few incidents which we discussed in our pastoral care sessions that hurt a little bit, probably no more than outside in the real world, things that do happen. But we worked those through and talked about them. And, you know, in any group of people, there's going to be a few, you know, that aren't happy to have us here, but I think the majority were. And we talked about those things. Looks like is it time now? I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah, I came in a little late. I don't know if you might have said it, but how many people, how many women live there?
8 and 2 crisis. But we never turn any crisis clients away, which is also our, if we can't, what we do when someone comes in crisis and needs to go to drug treatment, then if our office on the west side closes and we can't get them in that day, they're transported. That's, again, part of our spiritual philosophy because, you know, most people say, we don't have a bed, come back, and then what's going to happen to that person they're going to go out and use? So we keep them safe and we counsel them and we feed them until they can get into treatment. And so oftentimes, you know, people walk in, it's really funny, people come to visit, what are all those people doing laying on, just laying around on the couch? But I couldn't do that. You know, they're waiting to get into drug treatment because there's no beds, you know. But that's, our spiritual base makes us very different from programs that are controlled by Medicare or Medicaid. And that's the other thing. That's why we like all our independent funding. When I was a healthcare administrator, I worked in AIDS, death and dying, domestic violence, debriefing of tragedy type. You know, if a school caught on fire or something like that. I did a lot of debriefing work and did counseling work on television, actually, for relationship issues. And in all these different situations I was in, I would always say, gee, if a program really worked and you didn't have to, you know, do this for Blue Cross Blue Shield, or you didn't have to do this for Medicare, you didn't have to do this for public aid, and you're independent, and this was sort of like my dream program because, you know, I'm not beholden to anybody. You know, I mean, we have to meet our statistics, but I don't have to say you can only stay for 24 hours. I don't have to say any of that. If you can stay here till we have a bed, and we'll feed you and we'll take care of you until you get there, and we'll call and we'll help you make the calls you need to make. So that's what's really fun about it. You know, we don't have to say come back. And that's why I want to have the housing, so when people went in to get to the housing, that we never have to say, we'll have to refer you to another place. But that's what's fun about it. We kind of do our own thing.
How do we, as we want to learn more about this or encourage our own communities to look at something like this? Somebody mentioned that there's information packets.
Yeah.
Have you gone over that in another session? Or
what you do is
we find you again.
Give your name and to Ingrid.
Okay.
And Ingrid's flying in next week for a board meeting, and she'll give me all the names. Anybody wants to be on the mailing list and wants an information packet. We also, I can't remember, what's our website? We have a website.
www.genesishouse.org.
Okay. We have a website, and I have email.
Mm-hmm.
Jen House, GenHousc, one word, AOL. So we have a website, we have email, and we have packets. And anybody, just give your name to Ingrid, and we'll send you. And then we have newsletters that come out, which tell about the graduations. You'll probably be seeing some of these women in the graduate news. So, and we'd be glad to put you on our mailing list. You'll get our newsletters and see what's happening. And Ingrid, I've made the keeper of the names. But I did tell her this morning that I was going to tell people here. So she won't be. I thought, oh, I better tell Ingrid. But she's flying in next week, and she'll bring the names to me. Any other questions? Oh.
You may have mentioned this, but how many volunteers do you have, and how do you train them and assign them to their various tasks?
We're strict about volunteers because actually someone tried to plant a spy there, which was really funny about. And because we're so strict, he gave up. He's like, why do you want to come here? Where'd you hear about us? What's your purpose? We do, especially with, unfortunately, males, who one of our, you know, there might be some weird attraction, so you've got to be very careful. We have first a verbal interview, we have a written application. They have to have a letter of reference, just like a job. And then there's different things, job descriptions, that you can sort of decide what you want to do. And then our volunteers themselves do volunteer training. And they will meet with the person and spend an evening there at Genesis with a volunteer with you. And that's pretty much how it works. But it is a process where, because the one thing about, there's just certain things teaching them about the population and what to expect and so on. But we have good volunteers.
Do they have to have professional skills?
No. Some people come and cook. Mm-hmm. Some people, you know, just like...
Like Holden Village.
Yeah, if somebody needs to go to the doctor and needs a ride, you know, just whatever it might be that they feel comfortable with.
Gail,
Oh, pass that around?
Yeah, let's just... I'll get it to Ingrid.
Okay, thank you.
If you want... As long as everybody's here, yeah. Might as well.
There's one in the back. I was wondering if there's ever been a time when men would try to come and do bodily harm to the women that are in the house.
Well,
I know we have safe houses in Tacoma, and they're not well known. Some of them are well known, but they're with their children and their stairs in a very large yard. How do you keep these guys away?
Well, we're not listed, but we are. The lucky news is we're a block and a half from the police station, and there is employee training. We haven't had many incidents, but some, you know, an example of one would be that sometimes, you know, obviously the women have been involved in drugs, and maybe something negative happened. They owe money.
Yeah.
And I remember one occasion when three men came dressed like FBI agents and said they were the FBI. And so, you know, and staff is trained, okay, you wait right here, you know, because we have a vestibule. It's not, you don't open into the front door. Well, I call the police that are down the street, and we'll find out. And then they ran away. And then my former director was from New York, and the big incident I'll never forget is a crisis client who was still, you know, using crack, came back, and I don't know, accused somebody of stealing her shoes or something crazy like that. And I heard all this commotion and, like, thumping, like, up in my desk. So I come running down, and I see, like, someone in a closet with people, like, dragging her legs out and all this flailing. And this huge guy was with her. He was, like, probably, like, 6'4 and 250. And my little petite New Yorker is chasing this man. You get out of here! And I'm like, isn't anyone going to call 911? You know, I'm the one. She's fighting with him because she's got that. I'm the only one calling. They're dragging this woman out of the closet, and I'm on the phone to call 911. And then we ran out and got the license, and it turned out, we sort of figured out that he might have been an off-duty cop, which was pretty weird. He had brought the woman back. So, but the police were there immediately because they know us and they protect us and care for us. So they'll be there in a second. And that's a big station because they have to arrest all the drunks at Wrigley Field and, you know. So there's a lot of police over there. It's a busy, they've always got about 20 cars sitting there. So, and they can run down, you know, the street if there's traffic. And they're good to us. The other point I'd like to make, we are very supported by the judges, the police, the detectives, vice, public defenders. They all like us. And they know it's a good thing.
I can't imagine you not getting overrun with needs. Like you said, 52 people in one day. And how do you respond to get that many people, not only immediate things and then assessments? And
It's hard. I mean, Ingrid, it was kind of funny. She's so funny. And she said, you know, that was a... Because the women are still using drugs, you know, at that point. They've just been arrested. And she said, I kind of was trying to figure out the groups, and I thought, the heroin group, the crack group, and the group that was drunk, you know, because you had people on crack over here, and you had people nodding up and down. And she said, you know, how do I divide these groups up? I said, well, that's kind of good. We never thought of it that way. But I think you just keep, you know. And she, you know what, Ingrid, she said, I don't think I'm funny. And I said, I think you're hilariously funny. You don't even realize how funny you are. But that we just keep asking for more housing and more money and just keep trying to meet the need. I mean, we do have to refer people out, but we'll never just tell someone to leave without some kind of help. That is number one, and all my employees know that. You will not just tell someone sorry, ever. You know, if we have to send them somewhere else, you know, we have to, but we will make the call, and we will make sure you have a place to go. So So that's pretty much our philosophy and part of our mission. But that's why I'm trying to get a Southside office into new housing, because we are, because any program that gets a reputation for excellence, you're going to be overrun. And that's really what stage we're in now. And getting so much money that we're hiring, you know, it's almost just, I'm in a constant, we get money and then I have to hire, and then it's almost like when I get money, I think, oh, how many people do I have to interview? You know? And you have to interview very carefully about who you allow to treat the women and what kind of people they are.
She does that very thoroughly. I was in an interview with her for an hour and a half. For my staff position.
I wanted to say, first I wanted to give thanks to Wanda Cryer, and I wanted to talk about how she helps us in the house. She makes on-the-spot corrections. They show us, well, they teach us how to dress and, you know, our different actions, maybe the way we walk, we talk, our attitude, something that, you know, they just point out to us. She's very good. She points out to us what could be a trigger, so that when we outside in the streets that we're not still portraying, or we might not even be aware that we have adopted these behaviors and they become a part of our life. So, you know, it's like still being like on a dry drunk. Mm-hmm. And this is what they do for us. They help us with our issues. And they, I guess, they have to watch, pay a lot of attention. I guess that's why her eyes are so popping. She was afraid to go out because she had felt like she had done so much to so many people. She didn't know that who might be out there still waiting and, you know, wanting revenge. So this is good for us to help us in these types of situations and, you know, just learn how to forgive ourselves so we don't feel so guilty when we're out on the streets and we don't know who we've harmed because, you know, we were drunk and a lot of things was going on. And the house helps us to identify with a lot of the things that was going on in our lives that we wasn't even aware of. And that's a good thing as far as perpetrators and people on the streets. This helped us from not being like targeted. A house where, you know, men would follow us in, we're wearing mini skirts and things like that. So we don't do stuff like that to provoke that type of behavior from society. And I wanted to share that.
I wanted to commend the staff too. We have, I think, about 25 staff members now. I'm hiring like 3 more people when I get back. And we have a great staff. They're all there because they want to be there, not because it's high paying or not because it's easy. But we have a great staff. And Wanda really, let's give Wanda a hand.
I wanted to just mention how she had mentioned part of something on documentary. In Chicago, I'm part of a documentary project called City 2000. And how I got to be part of this project was an audio journalist and a photographer came to the jail where I was locked up prior to coming into Genesis House. And I signed releases to do audio sessions in jail and some pictures taken while I was in my county uniform. They've been following up my progress afterwards. The audio journalist came and actually picked me up the day of my release and brought me to Genesis House so that I could, you know, she didn't want no diversion whatsoever to be there. So she picked me up and brought me to Genesis House. And we've been doing audio sessions. She's been to me. We met in jail. She came to the treatment with me to do audio sessions there. She's been to Genesis House so far already. And prior to coming to this trip, I was to do a photo shoot, which I'll probably wind up doing when I get back. And everything is going to wind up in a time capsule, in a time thing in the Chicago Historical Society Museum in Chicago. So
yay.
It's a big experience.
it's a whole lot of fun. I'm openly, I talk about anything I want to talk about. And it's private. I don't involve my other sisters. She's just with me. And
that's pretty cool.
It is. It's really cool.
That's funded by a foundation to where the National Endowment for the Arts,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. So it's not only just about me, but it's about every little pinpointing thing in Chicago. It's like the whole city of Chicago for the whole year 2000, and they'll be documenting my progress for the rest of the year 2000.
That's great. Well, everybody, the bell.
Yeah.